Hello, ladies and gentlemen. It's that special time of week again. That's right. It's movie moan time here at thinkmeflythink.com. This is Jamie Williams, co-runner, co-operator, co-whatever, here at TMT. And as always, right next to me in spirit is my buddy across the pond, Mr. Phil G. Say hello, Phil.
Hello, everybody. I hope you all enjoyed the Super Bowl. I hope you're all having a lovely, lovely week. Mine's been nice, actually. Things have been going very well.
Except
for one thing, one frustrating thing which happened to me yesterday, Jamie. Do you mind if I tell a little story?
By all means.
I won't be long.
Oh, take it down.
Folks, you might remember a little film which came out in America in December called Punisher Warzone. It is the third attempt to put the Punisher on the big screen and make not only a successful Punisher film, but also a successful money-making film. And it seemed to fail on both accounts. But I'm a Punisher fan. I love the Garth Ennis series, Welcome Back, Frank. I actually enjoyed the Dolph Lundgren version of the Punisher. And I enjoyed the Thomas Jane version. And I was looking forward to this version. And some people liked it. And you know, it didn't have a UK release date, and then it flopped in America.
Hard.
And then I thought, oh man, it's never going to get a UK release date. I don't want to have to wait till DVD. I'm going to watch it on the internet. So I watched it on the internet. I watched an illegal copy. I broke the law. I am confessing right here. I'm an asshole.
Ladies and gentlemen, this will be Phil G's last show. The government will, in fact, apprehend. Go
yes,
ahead.
It will. But I said to myself that if the movie gets a UK theatrical release date, I will go and see it. Even though I watched it illegally and thought it sucked, I said, I will go and see it. I will give this movie my money because I wanted to see it and that's only fair. So, turns out Punisher Warzone does get a UK release date. The release date was this weekend, the 6th of February, the same time that Benjamin Button, The Curious Case of Benjamin Button, got released in this country. And I thought, okay, well, I'll see them both. I'll watch a double bill. I mean,
there you go.
What a double bill. Punisher Warzone and Benjamin Button in the same
together
game.
At last.
Together at last, as it should be. I checked the listings. It says Punisher Warzone. It's only showing at 12 o'clock and 9:30. I thought, well, okay, that's fair enough considering how bad it tanked.
Yeah.
They're not going to put on multiple showings of this thing on multiple screens. Fair enough. I go down to the cinema. It turns out that 12 o'clock actually means 12 a.m., a.k.a. midnight.
Jesus.
So the thing was only showing at 9:30 in the evening and at midnight. So I have to travel a long way to get to the cinema, frankly. And even if I were to be in the cinema, in town, in my city at that time of night, I frankly don't like the idea of being there at that time of night, in a cinema at midnight with people who would see a Punisher film at that time of night. And frankly, it sounds to me like the kind of people who would sharpen chainsaws, possibly. I don't know. It didn't sound appealing to me. So I went to see Benjamin Button at its earliest showing, and I was the only person in the theatre, so I really don't know how well the movie's going to do. Maybe people went in the late afternoon.
Well, that in its own right might speak for itself, buddy, because it's like the first showing, no one's there. Because when I went the opening weekend, it was packed. I mean, I don't want to say it was a lot of people. Not packed, per se, but there were certainly a good, fair amount of people in there, and it was also the early morning screening.
Well, I don't know, man.
But
all
I will
I
be.
Can tell
but
you,
I'm gonna.
I was the only one there.
I'm gonna have to eat my words right now and say I thought I was saying that it was going to flop in the States.
It did.
I said that many times, and it hasn't. It's considered a hit. Having said so, I was wrong. I will say it right now. I was wrong. So props to whoever said I was full of shit on that one, because you were right and I wasn't. Having said that,
well, to be fair to you, Jamie, you only said it was going to be a flop in relation to the fact that it cost the earth to make.
Yes, and and that was my point, is the fact that it's being written off as a hit, and yet it's probably barely going to break even, if that. I mean, it'll probably break even thanks to the foreign box office. I could see it doing rather well in Europe and whatnot, but you know, it cost a fortune. And I know that everyone's, like, the official number they're saying is, at first they were saying 150, and I think there was a bit in Hollywood Reporter of Variety saying, like, well, 170, 180. No. I know for a fact that movie cost well over $200 million, closer to 250. I know that for a fact, that they were halfway through filming, and it crossed the $200 million mark. In production, mind you.
That's amazing.
And it's on the screen. It's on the screen, you know.
As opposed to Punisher Warzone, which cost 10 cents and didn't even make that.
It made a penny.
My basic point to this story, Jay.
Yes.
Is I simply want to send a message out to the Federation Against Copyright Theft, FACT, which is the anti-piracy organization in this country, not the MPAA. I just want to send a message to those people and say, fuck you. I tried to repent my sin. I tried to give money to the UK cinema industry. I tried to pay legitimately to see a film which I know to be shit, which is True Commitment, and yet you made it especially difficult for me. Well, not you personally, but the cinema industry in this country made it especially difficult for me to see Punisher Warzone. So I'm sorry, but no, I couldn't pay for it. I will buy the DVD because I'm a Marvel completist. I have them all. I even have fucking Elektra. That's how bad I am. Yeah, I know. So I will pay for it eventually, but...
Not now.
You know, that's all I wanted to say. Fuck
that's
you.
Fine.
That's all I wanted to say.
Not to me, of course. Yeah, that's fine. No. I mean, you know, I didn't make the movie. I'm fine by that. But isn't it telling the fact they had to do three completely separate films in about, I don't know, 15-year mark, you know, and then none of them ever clicked with people? I mean, they're all, I guess, reboots, or they're all self-contained separate films in their own right. It's not like they're all connected in any way. It's not like Bond films where they're sort of loosely connected. They're completely different films. Is that right? I mean, there's no connection whatsoever.
Essentially, there is no connection, but if you want, you can call Punisher Warzone the sequel to the Thomas Jane version. You just have to ignore several continuity issues, kind of like Hulk and Incredible Hulk. If you ignore the difference in origin, you can see them as, you know, the same.
Well, see, that was even worse coming because it was written as a loose sequel, and then they decided, no, let's just reboot it. So the one thing they did to make it different was, oh, let's add a scene at the beginning during the credits where we see the origin. That'll completely save us. That won't cause any confusion by that point. That was the one thing they did.
I know. I tell you, Jamie, you bring up something which I can't for the life of me get around. I can't understand why a single Punisher film hasn't really clicked with people in a bigger way. I mean, people still say we're on Saw 6 now, I guess. Saw 6 will be along the way soon.
Oh, yeah.
That's nothing but gratuity and violence are done on a low budget. Punisher is essentially the same thing. It's violent exploitation film making, and yet didn't make a dime.
But same studio.
By the same studio. Yeah, exactly. I don't understand it. I suppose if they'd started making Punisher films in the mid-80s, maybe it would be a different story, because timing is such a factor
yes,
for so many of these.
Because by the time
I've
they...
I've often said...
Yeah, go ahead.
Go ahead, James.
No, go ahead, sir. You have often said...
I was just going to say that I often think that the best Punisher film ever made wasn't a Punisher film. It was the 1985, I believe it was 85, a Sylvester Stallone film, Cobra. That's all
yes.
I was going to say.
Oh, Sly. How you don't know when to end on a good note.
Yeah.
I'm referring to I'm referring to the fact that he's doing yet another Rambo film. Ugh.
Rambo in the City. You can't argue with that.
Rambo
it
in
could
New
be
York.
Special.
Yeah, it could be just like Hercules in New York, where they dub as, you know, do a dub.
Ah!
What?
I suddenly just it's like a flashback that suddenly just hit me right in the head like a friggin' iron. I suddenly remember that movie.
Yeah, wasn't it Arnie's first movie?
It was. And I think he was dubbed completely.
He was completely dubbed. Now, I was wondering, was this pre-Pumping Iron, the documentary that first got him out there?
Oh, I don't know.
You don't know? I was wondering. I've never seen that documentary. I always meant to, but I'm just too fucking lazy.
All I know is that the only thing I've seen is that he was on a talk show. I think it was on Letterman, because Letterman likes to play those little pranks. He says, oh, well, let's see a clip of your new movie. And then they played a clip of Hercules in New York with the dubbed voice.
Wow.
Which is so completely unlike Arnold. That's the only time I've ever seen that version. Then, of course, when he was a movie star, they brought out a different version with the original soundtrack and his original voice. And he could speak English at that point, so...
You think they would have done that with, like, Kevin Costner back when he was big, when he exploded? Because remember, like, he had a reputation for being, like, a really good actor who kept getting cut out of his own movies. And you have to wonder, it gets to the point where, like, why didn't, you know, he thought, like, maybe, you know, Larry Kasdan would, you know, recut, at least maybe not him, but, like, you know, Columbia would have recut The Big Chill, and, like, put his scenes back in and said, starring Kevin Costner in The Big Chill. Also starring Kevin Kline, Glenn Close, Jeff Goldblum, William Hurt, Tom Berenger, and those other people.
Well, there is a slight difference between a big Hollywood studio putting out a film
right.
and then re-releasing it, and a little, I guess, Italian independent little
yeah.
studio.
Actually, they did that with Stallone. He did a porno, I remember. Reading about that. I forgot what it was called, and it had some weird name. He did it way before Rocky, and then he did Rocky. It was a huge hit, and then the porno studio re-released the movie and retitled it The Italian Stallion.
It's a good I think Rocky is a better title for a
well,
porno,
yeah.
myself. I could have called it Rocky Zero. Rocky. The Adventure Begins.
The prequel, The Phantom Menace. We're not going to go into
yes.
fake. It's a proof of how well a film does is like when there's always going to be the porno ripoff and the Bollywood ripoff. So I'm waiting for the porno ripoff of Benjamin Button called the Curious Cock in Benjamin's Butt.
Fuck me, Jamie. I didn't need to,
You know that. Well, I mean that it's true though. They always do that. So it's like we might as well go ahead and just pay. You know. Get a couple of ideas in them and, you know, get paid for our ideas and shit. I mean, you know, they did Zach and Miri Make a Porno. I mean, have you seen that yet or?
No, not yet.
No desire?
The DVD on that one.
Oh, I thought it was out already. Yeah, well, be sure you get the, make sure it's the one that says Zach and Miri Make a Porno because they're actually, the packaging is being quasi-censored in the States where a lot of outlets like the Walmarts and the Kmarts and whatnot, even the Targets, are releasing DVD packages called Zach and Miri, and the DVD case says Zach and Miri, but when you put the DVD in, it says Zach and Miri Make a Porno on the DVD menu in the actual movie, and even the cover is slightly re-edited so characters are moved around a little bit differently, you know, so they don't look as suggestive of what they're doing, if that makes any sense. Hopefully they don't do that in the UK.
Wow.
Well, ironically,
suddenly the effort I'm going to have to go to just to see a Kevin Smith film is knocking me over.
I know. Well, I mean, it's so funny because like apparently they think that's going to blow people's minds, but yet even in this new cut down version, you know, fucking they still show Jason Mewes in a G-string. It's like that's not going to blow audiences away, but like, you know, saying the word porno will for some reason.
Wow.
Although I will be
anyway,
fair,
I
will be fair though. I mean that movie underperforming really isn't a shock to anybody because you know me and you both called it like back when it came out. We both said like this movie's not going to do any business because it's you know they're not advertising it. They're advertising it rather poorly and the term porno turns people off. And it did.
Yeah, I believe I said that there are people who might want to see it, but frankly they are not going to go up to the person at the ticket counter. At the box office and say, I'd like to see Zach and Miri Make a Porno.
That's right.
They just, yeah, that's what
and when
I said.
And when I saw it in theaters, I mean, it wasn't, I mean, there were people in there, but it was like, you know, at the multiplex, there's probably like, we could probably fit, what, 200 people, 300 maybe? I don't know. Let's just say 200 people. I'd say there were about 20 there on the Saturday matinee screening for that film when I saw Zach and Miri. Kind of gives you an idea. And then when the film underperformed, I mean, to be fair, it made money, but it, you know, but still, it just really underperformed. I mean, I think they were expecting box office in like $70 or $80 million region.
Oh, well, we're not here to talk about the past, Jamie. Let's talk about the future.
Yes, including really the one big news item. We're going to talk about a few little things, but the one huge news item this week is Real, after much rumors and innuendo, it's been confirmed that Warner Brothers has a director they want to helm the Green Lantern for 2010, summer 2010, and it is Martin
McGee.
Campbell. Yeah, exactly.
Oh, shit, that was wrong.
Yeah, Martin fucking Campbell, the man who gave James Bond his balls back twice they want to has the opportunity to direct Green Lantern.
Which Bond films did he direct, Jamie?
GoldenEye, the beginning of the Prosen era, and the reboot Casino Royale, which is, in my opinion, one of I think it Royale is the best Bond film.
I believe if he said "suck my dick, Phil G," I probably would.
I wouldn't, but I would thank him for considering me. But no, I wouldn't. No, thank you.
Now, he also directed The Mask of Zorro.
Which is a great movie. I mean, like, that's... But he also, on the other end... On the other end of the spectrum, he directed The Legend of Zorro. But I'll give him the benefit of the doubt because Mask of Zorro was so fucking great. Like, I saw that as a... I was 14 when I saw that in theaters, and I saw that trailer in front of every movie during the
entire summer
of 98. So you couldn't help but get pumped for that movie. And I was there 10, noon screening, Friday afternoon, first screening for Mask of Zorro. I was there. Had to. And that was a great – because of this, I'm probably going to go pull it up on YouTube after the show and rewatch it because that was a great trailer.
It's true. I saw it in front of – you're right. I saw that trailer in front of everything, and we didn't actually get it in the summer. We had to wait till Christmas. So imagine the amount of times you saw the trailer times two for me.
But that's just as good. Christmas is a great time to see it also. I mean, I wouldn't have objected to that. It's funny with the Martin.
Now, here's what I'll say about that, Jamie.
Yeah, go ahead.
I was just going to say, to me, Martin Campbell is two things. He reminds me of, in a lot of ways, of Ridley Scott. And the way he reminds me of Ridley Scott is that they're both great directors in different ways, but neither of them are writers.
No.
There are some directors who are real auteurs, and if they end up with a shit script, they have like a pet writer who can rewrite it, or they rewrite it themselves and they turn it into something better. I can't think of any examples at the moment, but there are those kind of directors. Other directors like Ridley Scott and Martin Campbell, they just get a script and they don't know how to make it better, and they end up just shooting that script, and they'll either end up with a good script and a great film, or a bad script and a bad film, and that's how Ridley Scott ends up directing the odd bad film, and that's how Martin Campbell ended up directing The Legend of Zorro and Vertical Limit, that Chris O'Donnell rock climbing movie in the snow. Yes. On the other hand, I think I'm pretty safe in saying this. When it comes to Martin Campbell, is not an auteur filmmaker. Ridley Scott is, but as far as action goes, I would say Martin Campbell is one of the best action filmmakers working in mainstream movies today. The guy has a talent which so many directors lack. He can make action sequences that are kinetic, that are thrilling, that are shot at normal speed and normal pace and do not require slowdown, and yet he knows exactly where to position the camera and make the audience see what the hell is going on. He can turn, while Michael Bay is busy having the Constructicons, which are three times the size of Optimus, blow shit up, Martin Campbell is able to take a simple thing like two guys fighting on a staircase and turn it into something absolutely heart-pounding that is shot, that is absolutely super fast if you look at it, but at the same time, we can see everything that is going on because it's so beautifully choreographed and so beautifully shot, and there isn't a single bit of slowdown in it. He doesn't use any tricks, like any horrible MTV editing. He doesn't use the slowdown. He doesn't use the fast motion. He doesn't use that kind of shaky blur-o vision that Paul Greengrass and Ridley Scott sometimes do. He's not like that. So as far as action filmmakers go, I think Martin Campbell is at the top of the pile, and I love him for that. And so any action film that he's attached to, I get excited.
Well,
I can't say he's going to make...
Yeah.
Sorry, I've gabbed on. You go ahead.
No, not at all. What's interesting about this is that there have been a lot of reports that, you know, originally it was going to be directed by a gentleman by the name of Greg Berlanti, who is more known in the television field as a really successful television writer producer. He wrote the script. He was going to be one of the producers, and he was going to direct it. This would have been his feature directorial debuted, and they were scouting locations in Australia a month or two back, and then it got quiet, and it started to, there have been rumblings that Warner Brothers was wanting to get someone who's had a little bit more of experience. Yeah, I mean, this is a very expensive movie. And the other thing that was interesting is originally the reports are coming out that Warner Brothers is – like this was like around – right before Dark Knight opened. And they were saying that Warner Brothers loves the script. They want to make it as their big tentpole for 2010, the summer. And it's going to be insanely expensive. And they're willing to put every penny to get it made. We're talking like – over $200 million expensive. And since the economy has gone to shit the way it has, and they've been handing out pink slips and they're making fewer movies, they're, you know, it kind of made sense to say we should probably go to a director who we know can, you know, deliver, you know, who's been proven in the past, will do what we tell him to do, but has talent. I mean, Martin Campbell is a great choice. He's a name who's been brought up for Superman to do the Ralph boot, and I wouldn't have objected to that. I mean, he wouldn't have been my choice, but Campbell doing Green Lantern is great. And, you know, the writing was on the wall for Mr. Belanti when news came out maybe like 2 weeks ago that Warner Brothers was giving him another property altogether to direct, a much smaller film called This Is Where I Love You, based on a book, and he was going to direct that. And even in the trades, they said he's going to make this after Green Lantern, but yet it just was very suspicious that all of a sudden, a movie that was really quiet, that he was supposed to direct, and all of a sudden they've announced something else for him, and then this comes out about Campbell. So, you know, it wasn't surprising. I mean, the name was surprising. I certainly didn't think Martin Campbell was on anyone's radar for this franchise, but I'm totally for, you know, Martin Campbell doing this. But he's only in talks right now. He hasn't signed a deal. And the way this sounds is that the moment they get a director, I mean, this thing is going forward like that. I mean, they have got to get this thing out for 2010 for summer.
I think he's going to do it. But he's kind of – I mean, he's said – I mean, he's the kind of guy who wants to do different things. That's why he didn't do another Bond film.
Yes.
He's never done anything like this.
He'll do
before.
Another Bond film. I will say that right now. Come hell or high
well,
water,
we'll
he will. No, I'm going to go and say this. I think he'll direct another Craig Bond film. I will say that.
That would be so sweet. Anyhow, if the script is great, like you're saying for Green Lantern, then I'm not worried.
Really, it is.
If he gets a great script, he'll manage it. The only thing that's fascinating to me is we've never seen Martin Campbell really do a special effects movie before. Never mind a comic book movie.
No.
He's never done a special effects movie. His Bond movies, the Zorro.
Well,
they've all been done really using practical effects.
Well, there's some visual effects, but not like.
Yes, I seem to remember that that CGI horse in The Legend of Zorro that was fireproof and that did that sudden expression when it was about to get hit by a train.
Catherine Zeta-Jones. I mean, she was completely CGI'd as well. I mean, you know.
Wow. That's wow.
You have nothing to reply to that with.
No, just that I'll have to watch it again. Apparently,
I am not a fan of Catherine Zeta-Jones. I've never cared for her, and I really don't know what it is, but just something about it I just have never cared for. And maybe that's just me amongst the people listening to this podcast, but just didn't care for it.
I think it is just you.
It is just me.
Yeah. Oh well.
Fine, be that way.
We'll never meet.
I know.
Mention her again.
Okay, but speaking of DC properties, news came out this week. There was an earnings call Time Warner had, and in the middle of that meeting, or near the end of the meeting, the transcript came out, and the head of Time Warner, the CEO of the company, basically comes out, and paraphrasing, he basically says, okay, we're going to make more Batman movies, more Superman movies.
Really?
More, I know, shockingly. And here's the big surprise, though, more Sherlock Holmes movies. And it's funny because Slash Film broke the story, so Peter Serrano and the great guys over there broke it, and they put this tag about seven movies, like, oh, seven Batman films, you know, that they want to make seven Batman films. Well, it never says that anywhere on there. I looked at the transcript, maybe I'm getting blind in my old age of 24 years, but, you know, I didn't see anything about seven Batman films. What happened was he was comparing it to the Harry Potter films and saying we can keep going, and, you know, the Harry Potter films have seven films now, or I guess eight, actually, since they're going to split the last one in half in two. And my answer is, you know, technically they already will have made seven Batman films, because if you include the four films previously made, you know, the Burton Schumacher films, plus this Nolan trilogy, you know, my math may be a little off, but that's seven Batman movies right there, you know. I'm surprised no one has brought this up.
I just want to say off the bat, Jamie, that
yes.
I think Rowling will write another Potter book. I think she'll go away for 10 years and then she'll decide she needs to do another one because she craves the adoration of her fans. So she'll write another Potter book,
so.
Whether it's a prequel, you know, where Harry's a fetus and has a magical land in the womb or something, or when he's a 30-year-old. I don't know, I'm making this up.
Then
Warner Brothers will make another movie.
Well, I mean, I think I can't speak for everyone, but for me, the thing I'm looking forward to the most about seeing Harry Potter and the Deathly Hallows Part 2 is the ending. Because everyone knows how it ends by this point, but everyone saw how they're going to pull it off. Are they going to do the digital Botox shit that they did at the beginning of X-Men 3 and they're going to do for Tron 2? I mean, are they going to do that? Are they going to hire lookalikes? Or that's what I'm curious about. Am I the only one who feels that way? Or
I think... I don't know, man. I think Daniel Radcliffe will look fine in old age makeup. I can't for the life of me imagine the other two.
Old age? They'll be like, what, in their late 30s? That's not really old. It's just...
No, that's true, I suppose. Or they might have to change it. I don't know. I mean...
Yeah, they'll change it so that they're in a retirement home. It'll be the spin-off books, Harry Potter, like, you know, an old folks home, but they're wizards. I'd watch a movie like that.
I'm trying to think of a good joke, but I can't. We'll have to move.
But yeah, I mean,
here's what I'm thinking, Jamie. When I read this post on the site, I was just stunned. I was like, I suddenly had this image of this guy going to the ultimate head cheese of Warner Brothers and going, well, come on, dude. Let's make another Batman film. And the guy goes, come on. Oh, come on. Lenny, come on. I'll be your friend. Oh, thank you. And then he goes and makes the press announcement. This is like... This is not news.
No, it's not. It's not news about Batman or Superman. What's news is Sherlock Holmes, though. And I pointed that out in my article. I was like, this is kind of surprising because it's like, you know, both the Batman 3 and the new Superman film, they're both in the writing stages, early writing stages and whatnot. And Sherlock Holmes, though, I mean, I was always under the impression they were going to do like one movie and that's it. And that, you know, that must really speak for how I'm reading too much into it, but the way I interpret that is that they have seen the dailies and they're like, man, this thing's gonna do really well. We need to do another one. You know, they're thinking ahead because I mean, not a bad idea, but I just didn't really think there was that much commercial possibility for a Sherlock Holmes movie. But apparently, this one's gonna do really well. I can imagine it will be a rather decent size hit this coming holiday season.
I disagree with you slightly.
Okay, shoot.
I think any time I hear a story of, oh, we've seen the dailies and we know we've got something here, I never believe those stories. It never rings true to me. I think they've just... I mean, look, we're in a... It's the constant eternal battle in Hollywood. No matter what the financial situation is right now and what the economy's like, they're all... always desperate for tentpoles because this business is so fickle that, I mean, look what's happened to Narnia. You think you've got something that's going to last for seven movies and be a cash cow for the next decade,
right?
And you make one catastrophic mistake, and which often happens in this business, and boof, it's gone.
Always
have to have backups.
Now, out of curiosity, did you ever think they would do all seven Narnia movies?
Never.
How many did you think they would do? Do you have
three.
Any? Three? You thought that would be it?
I always thought only because, and it wasn't because of the last one's too unfilmable or anything like that. I just felt that I read up. I haven't read the books, but I've read about them. I've read the synopsis. I've Wikipedia'd them, so I'm up on the knowledge there. I know the titles of all of them, and I've read about the others, and I just felt these don't sound very filmic at all, especially the titles: The Magician's Nephew, The Prince and the Cobbler. a silver chair. Well, the silver chair sounds nice, actually, but the others don't sound very exciting at all. Apparently they're lovely books, but no, I just didn't see it.
You
don't go from Prince Caspian to the magician, the prince in the cobbler. It doesn't work like that. Temples franchises have to go up. That's the rule. That's just the way it is. They have to go up, and if there's a bumpy road, if there's a flop, then fine, then it goes down a bit, but then they have to make up for it with the next one and go up again. It's just how it works.
Yeah, I agree. To be fair though, I never thought, like, there was never a doubt in my mind they would do all the Harry Potter books. I never thought they'd use the same kids in all of them.
I did.
I never did. I was like, that's a fucking, they'll do four of them. That's a, you know, I was really in the Bond mindset, but shows what I know. Because that's it. I mean, you kind of wonder what will happen to those kids after they finish the Harry Potter films, like what they'll do. Like, because they're so fucking rich, they can basically just do whatever they want for the rest of their lives. And they're still kids. You know, it's just like, wow.
You never can tell with child actors. I mean, you look at, what's his name? Sixth Sense kid. I'm sorry. I don't forget,
yeah,
forget
your name.
Yeah. I'm sorry. He must. He's so good in that film, and he's so good in AI. Not a very popular film. A lot of people don't like that film. I like that film, and I thought he was magnificent in that film. And, you know, I thought after walking out of that, I thought this kid's unstoppable. He can do anything, and indeed he could do anything because he did, you know, not good films, and you can just never ever tell. But yeah, it's true, they are set for life unless they get into bad gambling habits,
which is most of them, sadly.
Well,
I hate to say that, but I mean, it's true. It's like, you know, it's terrible to say that and shit, but you know,
but
I mean,
you say the things say, that are hard to say.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to think that. But, you know, you could all – I mean, you know, for every terrible story like that, there is a Christian Bale or a Jodie Foster, you know.
We're not going to talk about that, are we?
No. I don't feel the need to talk about it.
Everyone's sick to death of it.
I'll say one thing about this is the fact that it's a two-way street. There's a lot of – everyone only wanted to play the part where he looked bad, and although he was at fault to a degree – for making a bad scenario even worse by ranting, the DP on that movie was a fucking moron, and he deserved what he got. So, and I mean, let's go even further. This happened a year ago. This was old news. I guarantee you, they probably kissed and made up already. You know, I mean,
didn't you catch his apology?
I did.
Says they're cool. No, I don't want to get into it. It's
stupid. This old news.
About it. I will say
it's a sign of how slow news is going right now. Is if we're gonna fucking dig up a story we already heard about a fucking year ago. I mean, because we already heard about this when his, you know, deadbeat of a mother and stepsister tried to, you know, what was it? They tried to pull a scam and, you know, blackmail money out of the dude in court. I would be in a bad mood if that happened. Why are we digging this up again? I mean, come on.
Well, we'll move on then.
Well, I mean, yeah, I just, that's the way I feel. I mean, what can I say?
I'm really excited about the Sherlock Holmes news. I actually figured that this is, I mean, I don't see why it shouldn't be a franchise. I mean, there's so much material there to mine that you can actually put a kind of, and I like, from what I'm seeing, I like where they're going on it. It really does feel to me that they are going the Batman Begins route on it. That's the kind of feel that we're going
better to than do. The
could be wrong.
Better than the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen route. Well, they have to add the, you know, the just for no reason the American character, because according to some executives it's funny, at the time when they made that movie, they said like, oh, well, it has to be an American because people don't want to go see a movie with all British cast, all British characters. And yet the movie that opened the exact same day of League of Extraordinary Gentlemen was Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yeah.
British cast. I mean, Depp was putting on an accent, a British accent, but it was dead on, I think. I mean, I'm not British. I don't know what gave it away, but
it was English and Jamaicans.
It was. Yeah. I don't know what Depp was, but I mean, it was mostly, you know.
And Harry Potter.
Harry
no
Potter.
No Americans in there.
Go, dude. And I
Lord
you know,
of the Rings. No Americans in there.
Well, Elijah Wood. Actually, there are.
English characters.
Oh, okay. I'm about to say, yeah, I'm pretty sure like some of those actresses are, you know, putting on accents and shit. But I'm gonna try. Is there like an? I guess Viggo Mortensen was the only one who put on a quote American accent. I guess you'd call it that, but it wasn't really an American accent.
No.
You don't think so?
And 300. And that's a great comparison to make, because that's also based on a lesser-known graphic novel. But correct me if I'm wrong, Jamie, there are no American accents in that movie. None!
I've only seen it since the opening night, so I really don't...
In that case, I'm right.
Unless the villain counts, the one is just like, you know, you're destroying my army. I don't know if that's American. I'm pretty sure it's not, but...
you seem to remember that voice pretty well. That was spot on.
You know what, dude? I saw the South Park episode that came out like 2 weeks after 300 premiered where they did a... I don't know if you saw that episode, but it was pretty damn funny. You should check it out.
I'm so far behind on that. I'm catching up now. The last one I saw was the one where they laid into Rob Reiner. He was trying... I don't know if you saw that one.
Yeah, because his pants kept falling off, like many fat people.
I don't remember that.
Because he kept having to pull his pants up, and he kept like breathing heavy. Yeah.
Oh yeah. No, he was rubbing a cloth on his head and all the time because he was constantly sweating and he was trying to get smoking banned. And
yeah,
eating all the time. Yeah, yeah. Ouch. I actually know someone like that at work. That's what made it funny to me. But we'll move.
But now, speaking of 300, though, you had an opinion before we started recording this podcast about Watchmen. You wanted to talk about that. So what's on your mind, sir?
Only this, Jamie. All
right.
Last week, I had an epiphany when you mentioned Watchmen to me, and I suddenly said, oh, yeah, I forgot that movie was coming out. It's weird how after this whole rollercoaster ride of a legal battle, which is finally settled, and the movie is coming out in your country
as scheduled.
On March 6th, as scheduled, I can't wait to see it because I love going to see movies in IMAX. It's a special event for me, you know, to see a movie in IMAX, because it only happens once or twice a year. I get to make a big deal out of it. I love going down there. Can't wait to go see it. But it seems the marketing that this movie is getting right now
is terrible.
It's viral. It's terrible. It's viral. The posters are shit.
Oh, God.
And frankly, I would be surprised if everybody has forgotten. I mean, the world at large, the audience, the mainstream audience, they're going to plop down their books and see it. The same audience they're hoping who went to see 300 will go and see Watchmen, give it a $60 million opening weekend. I don't think it's going to happen. I think people have forgotten it's coming out. I go on the internet all the time and I nearly forgot.
I don't know, dude. I mean, this is going to take a lot of creative accounting for this movie to actually be considered profitable because they've got to pay so many people. I mean, if you notice, you know, part of the settlement, they've got to pay 20th Century Fox a bunch of money up front and then a piece of the back end, and they get if they do a sequel or a spinoff or whatever, they get a part of that. But if you notice, you know, Paramount's listed in the credits in the opening as well. And there's Warner Brothers who made it, and Legendary Pictures who made it with Warner Brothers. So they have to split the cost and, you know, get their money back as well. Plus, I don't know what Paramount's involvement is. So you've got basically four major companies right then and there who are going to have to be paid for all this. You start earning profit. I don't see how this is going to happen with this movie. I'll say it again. Considering the tough times we're living in right now, people want to see light. They want to see entertaining. They want to see shit that's going to entertain them for 2 hours. And this is not going to be it whatsoever. And they're marketing it as sort of an action-adventure sci-fi superhero movie. And I get the impression people are going to go in, and I really think the people who are aware of this movie coming out, some of them are not aware of the book. Like, they don't know how dark it gets and how serious it gets.
I don't. Because I told you I'm going in spoiler-free. I'm going to read the book after I see the movie. I don't want to know what's going to happen. I don't know yet. I've actually managed to say spoiler-free on it. Here's what I think, Jamie. I think, like many movies, if the movie really is that good, which we don't know yet, we've heard a good buzz on it, but if the movie is really, really good and the critics really fall in love with it and they can then say, oh, amazing, we're getting all this good buzz, Now let's kick off the marketing. They might be able to save it, and it will be one of those word-of-mouth pictures. It's possible. It can happen.
I just can't see that happening.
If the movie makes Batman Begins money, then it isn't a flop, is it?
If it makes Batman Begins and Returns money, it's not a flop, but it basically breaks even. And it depends on how people are going to write it off. Are they going to write it off as a hit or as an underperformer or what? Because both those movies made the same amount of money, and yet one was considered an underperformer and one was considered a hit in revisionist history. You know.
Let's face it, Jeff. This isn't a franchise. This is one movie. This is not the start of something we're hoping. This isn't X-Men.
Right.
We need to see the first one do well so that we can get Sentinels and Dark Phoenix, and turns out we got neither of those, but that's a whole other thing. We'll go into that right now.
We did.
It's just one movie which has been stuck in development hell. It's amazing it's finally on the screen, and even if it doesn't do well, it's slightly selfish.
It's going to be there.
But,
it'll be there for the times.
We'll still get four different DVDs.
Oh,
different extended cuts.
Yes. Well, I've always felt that this film would be very similar to the reception of Blade Runner and Fight Club, where it's considered great, but no one goes to see it, and it develops an audience and admirers years and years down the line, slowly but surely. That's how I've always felt about what happened with Watchmen. I've never seen it as a commercial property. I just can't.
Think about Sin City. I mean, that's not a cheerful film.
That
by
was a
any
big
means.
Hit. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was a good movie. I mean, I really loved that flick. And it, you know, and yet there's no sequel. I mean, yeah, that's the damnedest thing. It's like there will be. No, at this point there never will be.
I'm
and
calling
there was
it right now.
Oh God, not at this point. Which is funny because like certain movies are successful and yet they never got a sequel, and they were clearly, you know. I mean, granted, there doesn't need to be a Sin City sequel, but, you know, like, they were thinking once after the opening weekend, like, oh, shit, we got a sequel. Baby, sequel coming! Didn't happen. Because they kept saying they were going to do a sequel, and they kept saying release dates. Like, originally they were saying, like, summer 2006, and then that didn't happen. And then they said 07, 08, and now it's just kind of like, poof, gone.
I know, man. These kind of things you can never tell. I'm glad it's been made. I just think they've fucked up on the marketing.
I really don't disagree with that whatsoever. It's just, you know.
But let's hope it's good. That's the important thing. Let's hope it's as good as we all hope it will be.
There you go. Hopefully more people will see it than the people who saw Benjamin Button with you.
I'd like a sequel to that.
What would you do with a Benjamin
titles,
Button 2?
Benjamin Button 2 titles fade up, little baby's face. He suddenly opens his eyes and just says, I was kidding. And then, you know, and it's all of a sudden he ages normally.
That would be very strange. Yeah.
He has a made-up movie disease, and the great thing about made-up movie disease is that you can just make up whatever rules you want.
Well, I mean, that's the only fantasy part of that whole movie. Because I remember when the teaser hit in front of Indiana Jones 4. I mean, everyone thought, oh, shit. I mean, my first reaction was, God damn, did Tim Burton make this? Oh, wait, it was David Fincher. Because I had friends who helped make the movie, who were involved in the production. So I was like, oh, wait, I know Fincher made this. That, and I'm a huge Fincher fan. Of course, I was following it because I'm a big fan of his. So, you know, it looked very fairy tale-like. And you see the movie, and you're like, well, the only fairy tale, quote, angle is the fact that there's the age reversal, and that's it.
Think about it, Jamie.
Yes.
Think about it. The moment that, okay, spoilers, everybody, spoilers, if you don't want to know the ending, duck and cover right now, even though I've already kind of explained it. Picture this, the second that Benjamin is about to die, somebody fixes the clock, and it starts going forward, the hands actually start going forward, and so...
The ghost of the clock.
Lives,
the fucking ghost of the clockmaker shows back up.
Yep.
I hope you liked my clock! And then
he's thinking like a normal person. And not only that, but because they've fixed the clock and it's running forward, now Benjamin's aging normally, but all the people who died, they're all aging backwards. And now his mind's about to explode because
everything's a little much.
Going backwards.
Wow. That's a little much, but okay.
Hey, you're fired.
You realize if you say that on the air, you have to pay Donald Trump a couple of bucks for saying that. He has Yeah, I know. You want to pay Trump? Because I don't. He has plenty of money, that asswipe.
I only have to pay him if I say, like, you're fired.
You're fired. God, that guy's such a putz. I mean, it's so funny when he was pimping that show when it was on, although there's another celebrity edition about to come up pretty soon. He always talked about it was like the greatest thing ever and it was such a huge hit. And it's like, no, it wasn't. It never was a huge hit. It did okay, but it's like, he literally would say like, our show is killing the competition. It's one of the top shows on television. It's like, no, it's not. It came on, it literally, they aired it against, Grey's Anatomy and CSI, like two of the biggest shows on TV. It's like, your fucking show did not do that well, buddy.
It's just the way he talks. It's just him. We've all learned to live with it.
I haven't, sir. And he's, you know, but that's just me, apparently. Yet again, it's just me. I'm very angry today, apparently. See, what else is going on in the news today? Let's see, looking here real quick. Ah, yes. It looks like Disney and DreamWorks might be making films together. Or Disney.
I can't fucking believe
it. Yeah, I can't either. Basically, there was a bad divorce between Paramount and DreamWorks last year. They split, and Universal sort of, there were a lot of negotiations where's DreamWorks going to go, and they signed a distribution deal with Universal since that's where Spielberg started. He has a lot of loyalty over there, which is awesome. I'm all for that. And they inked the deal, and everything seemed at peace with the world, if you will. And pretty much Friday afternoon, the story hit that no, that honeymoon's over, and they've already, the deal's off, and Disney, DreamWorks is already talking to Disney about signing a distribution deal. In fact, they actually, according to them, they said the deal is, it's done. I mean, some reports are saying it's done and that it will be announced Monday. So we'll see if that happens. But Spielberg and the Mouse, that's interesting. I mean, it's a distribution deal, so they'll make certain movies that, you know, Disney will put in theaters. You know, I like DreamWorks. I mean, they're responsible for some really great films and shit. It's kind of sad. It speaks much about how shitty the economy is right now when fucking Steven Spielberg is feeling it. The king of the blockbusters, man. The guy who's got more money. I don't want to say he doesn't have more money than God, but he's about the same amount of money as God, I'd say. And this guy's feeling it. Like, wow.
I'm just like picturing like day one of the DreamWorks team. Let's say the DreamWorks team arrive at Disney Studios, all to be given their new job assignments.
Yes.
And there's John Lasseter. They're all in a big lineup, single file. John Lasseter's at the head with his notepad. He's got a list of jobs that he needs to take off, and everybody's coming in. And it says, next, I'm so-and-so. I was the director of Shark Tale. Right. There's a mop and a bucket in the closet there. You go over and sweep the halls. Tick, janitor. I just can't believe that the Pixar people and John Lasseter and the Disney people who are trying to bring back traditional 2D animation are going to work with the DreamWorks people, the Madagascar 2 people.
Well, does that mean like the Shrek people?
The Shrek the Third people.
Yeah, and then Shrek Makes Fourth coming out next summer.
Shrek Goes Forth, yeah. Puss in Boots, Story of an Ogre Killer,
that's really going to get made, Puss in Boots. Like, I so don't think that movie's going to get made. When they announced it a year ago, I was like, all right, well, they might make it. And it's like, you waited a year to get a writer on board for a Puss in Boots movie? How hard is that to find a writer for that? This isn't happening, you know. That's just me, though.
I think so. I think you ask the people on the street, they've probably moved out of their Puss in Boots love.
Oh God! I mean, he was so great in the second one, and I really liked the first two Shrek movies, but that third one, that really left such a horrible taste in everyone's mouth.
I didn't even see the whole thing. I saw the first 5 minutes,
I went to a 10 p.m. premiere screening of Shrek the Third on Thursday night and the opening weekend, and man, I mean, there were a good chunk of people in there, and I think everyone's reception was like, wow, that sucked. Sign of things to come for that summer, ladies and gentlemen, the summer of disappointments. Although summer of huge box office as well.
Wow. I'm so speechless about it. I mean, I just can't believe this. I mean, of course, it's not a done deal.
No.
I just can't believe it.
Absolutely. We'll see if that. I mean, you know, for all we know, this might end up being like what happened with Universal, where they talked and they, you know, oh, everything's great, and then nothing happens, which is certainly not uncommon. But still, it's fucked up.
Yeah.
Let's see. Okay. What else? We didn't really list it here. I'm gonna cross out one news item, and we'll talk about it later. But Phil had a take on last week. We did an episode, our podcast, and we spent a lot more time than we anticipated talking about the Super Bowl TV spots and shit. And Phil and I were talking afterwards, and he goes, we were talking about how, it was a good show, had a good time, blah, blah. And Phil made the comment that there was so many news items this week that we forgot. Like, we couldn't include everything. And he said, that's a good sign. Like, it's how many things happened last week, which is true. And I brought up the A-Team. And Phil was like, oh shit, I forgot to talk about the A-Team. Because last week it was announced that director Joe Carnahan, who's done a couple of movies, including Narc, and was supposed to do Mission Impossible 3, and he's actually supposed to do a couple of movies that all never happened, he's actually signed up to direct the A-Team for Fox for, I think, a summer 2010 release is now the goal to get it out by. And Phil had a take on it, so, sir, the floor is yours.
Well, as regular listeners of the show will know, I do not have a very high opinion of Fox. I think, again, I'm going to say this. I seem to say it every week.
That's okay.
I think they make movies for teenagers with what they think have very short attention spans. And they will choke any director who dares to have a vision of their own for what a movie should be. They will package friggin' movies like they're a fast food meal, and they will make sure it hits all the beats they want and all the beats their market research is telling them and everything they think that Tom Rothman, that's the head at Big Cheese at Fox, thinks will appeal to people. No, we can't have an R-rated Die Hard 4 in this day and age. That's crazy talk. Good grief. We can't hurt the youngsters' ears with bad language. Good lord, no. We can't have an X-Men 3 that's over 100 minutes. Good god, people's bums will get sore. This is insanity. And here we have Joe Carnahan, I believe the terminology balls to the wall would not be out of order in describing Joe Carnahan.
No.
He's a guy who makes high-octane, high-energy, R-rated movies. One movie he made that Jamie didn't mention was Smoking Aces.
Thank you.
I don't know if Jamie's seen that. I saw that.
Did you like
wasn't it? Crazy about it, but it was okay. The ending was retarded, but and I've never seen it again, so I didn't really love it.
Who would have thought that Captain Kirk would have shown up in that movie? You know, who would have thought?
That was special. That was very special. So here we have an A-Team movie. First of all, we're talking about a movie that is based on a television show. And those are always hard to turn into good movies because you've got to find the right tone. And usually it's the tone that kills these movies. I mean, what are you going to do? You can either make it into a really serious movie like, what's his name? The Untouchables on Miami Vice director. What was
Michael
his name? Michael Mann. Sorry, Michael. I love your movies. I apologize.
You don't have to apologize.
Miami
Vice. I wouldn't apologize. You don't have to apologize to him. He did make Miami Vice.
No,
That's
I didn't like the movie.
Don't have
either.
To apologize. It was a terrible movie. Oh my god.
I didn't like it either. But
it's so fucking boring.
The point is, you make a movie like that, which is completely straight, based on a TV show, which is remembered more for its cheese factor, for its white pastel suits and its colour, and for the nostalgia than anything else. And you risk pissing off people who'd rather see a movie like, dare I say this, a Starsky and Hutch, which is also a movie which I thought was fucking terrible. Don't tell me you liked Starsky and Hutch.
The difference between Starsky and Hutch and Miami Vice is that I was intentionally laughing at one of them.
Okay, fair enough. But I hated Starsky and Hutch, that movie. I thought it was
waste. They basically turned it into a frat pack. The frat pack,
Yes.
I mean, that's basically what it was. And some people like. I mean, I love the frat pack. I mean, what can I say? They're getting a little older now, so they're kind of, they've kind of moved on. Now we've got the Apatow group who sort of replaced the frat pack. But, I'm a big. I laughed. What can I say?
Oh, well, it's fair enough. But basically my point is the A-Team, I think, was originally created as a television show to be just a cool 80s action show to fit it with many others that were in the market. Actually, it was a show that was created to build a show around Mr. T.
Well, it was that and the fact that they wanted the biggest movies, like the most successful movies up to that point were like these high-octane action films. They quoted like Raiders of the Lost Ark and the first two Mad Max films. They were saying like how they had these great set pieces, you know, and they wanted to do a show with those kind of like action set, you know, stunts and whatnot every week. That was the idea of the A-Team.
Yeah, and not a bad idea at all.
No.
But we don't remember the show for the action, Jamie?
I remember it for the opening title. That's all I know it for. Because it's so – there you go. Family Guy quite famously spoofed. You don't remember that?
How did they – no, I haven't seen Family Guy.
They did their own version of the A-Team opening. You know, with their character. You'll have to – once we get done with the show, Phil, I'll type it up and send it over to Phil.
No, dude. I've seen
– it's funny.
I don't know if you've seen it, but I've seen a Star Trek opening to the A-Team, and it's fucking hilarious.
Really? Wow.
I'll have to show you that.
Oh, fair enough.
We remember it not for the action. We remember it for the catchphrases, for the nostalgia, for the cheese – for Mr. T, you know, and so how do you do an AC movie tonally? Do you just make a cool action movie which takes itself seriously, albeit probably with a sense of humor, or do you make Charlie's Angels?
Oh, yeah.
Where we play up the cheese. Now, from what I can tell of Joe Carnahan as a director, he probably does not want to make Charlie's Angels 3. He wants to make a cool action movie which is done in his style with a certain sense of humor, like Smoking Aces was.
Right.
I haven't seen Narc, if I'm honest, so I don't know what that.
I haven't either.
Like, no, but we can tell you, like I say, Smoking Aces. So are they going to make that and R-rated? He's not a PG-13.
I don't know. I don't think that's going to be PG. R-rated, actually. I think that'll probably end up being PG-13. But yeah, you look at like how The Dark Knight pushed the PG-13 rating, so you could probably get away with it. I mean, you know, we don't even know what Terminator Salvation is going to be rated. That might be R, that might be PG-13, but either way, it's going to be a pretty intense movie. So, you know, we'll see what happens with that.
Well, all I'm saying is that Joe Carnahan thinks for a second that he is going to be able to get the movie he wants to make. Look, I could be wrong. This is all just hypothetical. I don't know what kind of movie he wants to make. I can damn well tell you the kind of movie Fox wants to make. They want to make something that will appeal to the kids. They want to make Charlie's Angels. They want to make something that's hip and cool and funny and fast and is in no way violent and is quick and just has nothing naughty in it whatsoever. And they want to make a movie for teenagers. And of course, which is ridiculous because teenagers weren't even born when the A-Team was on the air. I just think this is a complete... this is not going to work out. If the movie gets made at all, I wouldn't be surprised if Joe Carnahan does what that director of Babylon AD, that Vin Diesel movie, does, naturally slams the movie before it even comes out. I just think this is not a match made in heaven. It's a match made in hell. I just don't think it's going to work out. And the reason I didn't mention it last week is because I already did a Fox rant. I think I'm going to do one every week. I might need the theme music for it.
Well, I mean, you'll have to find something to bitch about next week. You know, we don't know what's going to happen between now and next Sunday. So as we're recording this, I'm sure they'll do something else. Don't worry. They'll fuck up somehow.
It'll be DreamWorks moves into Disney, Pixar moves out and moves to Fox.
Yes.
That's what it'll be.
Yes, there you go. So
I'm just thinking of the worst thing that could possibly happen in the history of film.
In your opinion, you know, something that would be horrible for you to see happen.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Yeah.
See, at this point, the old man is feeling he's going to have an internal monologue because he's so concerned about it. Sorry, what's an internal monologue? Can we make toys of it?
It'd be fun. That'd be a great, you know, action figure. The internal monologue.
Yeah.
I'm still waiting for the Babel action figures, you know?
Yes.
I want my little Cate Blanchett that gets shot. You know, you pull a string and like all like her, you know, parts where they get shot just fly off. Actually, a friend of mine had a great idea for a There Will Be Blood Happy Meal. We constructed these ideas for like There Will Be Happy Meals. And they didn't take off, sadly, but I would have bought one, you know.
I made a joke about that once, didn't I?
You might have. I wanted to do the HW, like, adult, where, like, you pull a string and he says, I want to be with you, you know, at the end of the movie. And
I said, no, I remember what I said. It said, you go to McDonald's and there's a sign on the counter and it says, we don't have bread, we have potatoes. That's what it was. I remember now. A little flashback.
That's there. A little subtle thing for people. It's weird to think that movie was so long ago, and it really was, and it was a year and a half ago, actually.
It's a year. For me, it was a year.
Oh, it was a year for you, a year and a half for me, yeah. Weird.
How about a really state-of-the-art Benjamin Button toy? It starts out as a little baby, but there's a little inflatable hole in the back, and if you blow enough air into it, it actually turns into Brad Pitt.
That's a great
and
idea, actually.
As you inflate it, it goes through all the stages of ageness, and eventually you end up with an old man.
Wow.
And you let the air out, and it goes right back down.
Wow. It is weird when you think about that flick, though, because it's like, that's a film that it would have played very differently if it had been about a woman who ages backwards than a man. That would have completely played differently. Dude, but you know people...
DVD
sequel. Yeah, exactly. That would have completely played differently to audiences, though. People would have found it probably...
Benjamina Button.
No. Wow. You said that, not me, buddy. But yeah, I mean, that would have completely played differently with audiences, you know. People would have probably been like, oh my god, that's disgusting.
Well, they've never really thought of it.
Yeah, there you go.
Okay.
You're just like, whatever. Yeah, that's it, actually. That's it for this week, folks. Hopefully, you know, there'll be big news this coming week so we can talk to you about and get all excited, which we were excitable this week. I mean, we both hated on our different sets of people, some more than others, but it's a good show. I enjoyed it.
We've got to make our Oscar predictions.
Yes.
Don't forget.
We need to do our Oscar predictions.
We should do that next week.
Well, I mean, the Oscars are in 2 weeks, and the way we record these is that, you know, it'll be the like a couple hours before they hit, so, you know, we can just do it then. But we'll figure it out. I the one thing I really wanted to do is do an episode, do the summer box office predictions a month before May, like at the
beginning
of April. Because everyone's going to be doing it at the end of April, and it's like, at least we'd have a little bit more of a perspective, and we don't have to, you know, just get what we think is going to happen, because I certainly have an opinion on some of the films that are going to click and certain some others that won't, and, you know, we'll get to that, but I'm looking forward to that episode, because we did it last year, and I was dead wrong about a good chunk of them. I'm trying to remember.
I was right about anything.
I think
anything.
The one I got right was I think I got Get Smart right. I said it's going to do a lot better than people think, and I think I said 150, and it did like 135. So I was like, well, it wasn't too bad. I think it was the closest I got was last summer, and I said Indy 4 would do like 320, I think, or 350. So then it did three. So I was kind of right, you know, $300 million. I was referring to.
I have to listen back to that show, dude.
That's an old show.
It is.
Yeah, I mean, but that is all. So.
And if you don't mind, Jamie, just for a second, I'd like to do a little plug.
No, by all means.
Just for myself, because, folks, if you've been to the site, which obviously if you've downloaded this podcast,
God bless.
You have, God bless you. I would implore you, please, go on to the section. Well, it's on the movie news section, and it's also on the Movie Moan tab. You'll see pieces called Movie Moan, the original series. Jamie and I did Movie Moan for a year as a live show with substantially less audio quality, but still the same infectious energy and going off on tangents. And I am in the process right now of turning those old shows, editing them down to get the base excitement
good
and
parts.
The discussion out of them with visual YouTube enhancement goodness and making YouTube videos out of them. And you can see those on the site, and it will take you to my YouTube channel. At the moment, I've done The Golden Compass and I've done The Matrix. I'm kind of happy with the way they've turned out. They could have been worse. Hopefully, they'll all be kind of good. So I just implore you, please, give them a go. You don't have to like them. I wouldn't force you to like them, but please do give them a watch. I mean, they're only like 8 minutes apiece, I mean, you'd only be watching
funny.
People fall over on skateboards anyway, wouldn't you, if you were on YouTube? So please, just, I implore you, I do work hard on them.
You did. Or, so you know, I mean, if you're going to watch pictures of a monkey smoking cigarettes, I mean, you might as well.
Yeah,
you know.
Exactly.
Which is pretty funny.
So in advance for watching them and for listening to this, thank you very much.
Thank you. Folks, we will see you next week. Thanks for listening. I guess that's all I can say. I was going to say something else insightful, but I completely...
Keep on moaning.
Yeah, keep moaning, ladies and gentlemen. Good night.